I'd like to use that as the basis of our discussion today, this sixth stage.
He made this comment. He said it's on the basis of a thrust rather than a fellowship that you get the kind of people that you want. It's on the basis of a thrust rather than a fellowship that you get the kind of people that you want. Now, I would like to know what you think he meant by that. Top name here is Harvey Cox. Harvey, what do you think he meant by that?
Who made the statement again?
Warren, he was talking to us about stage... Well, first of all, he said stage one, the six-stage rocket that he launched back there for us, and was, he said, the first stage is a thrust. And then he said, this is now, it's kind of thinking in terms of the broad area ministry, the first stage is going to be a thrust, an evangelistic thrust. He says, it's on the basis of that evangelistic thrust, rather than a fellowship, that you get the kind of people that you want. What do you think he meant by that?
I think he meant that as a result of a thrust, say on a campus or a base or a ship, if you have one or more, of course, working with this thrust, that you will reach several fellows, perhaps, or more than one, or you will in some way produce a pool in which to weed out or fish out the type of men that you do want. And whereas if you just pick out one fellow as a casual acquaintance and get time with him, that time could be wasted in the type of a fellow or gal that a person would want.
Okay, that's sure right. You'd, on the basis of a thrust, you would probably come in contact with more. But he was talking, as I understood the thing here now, he was talking more in terms of kind rather than quantity. Walt, what do you think he meant by this?
I think he meant that when you go into an area, you don't base your work on Christians that are already there, on a fellowship with other Christians. You base it on the thrust of the fruits of your own evangelism.
Now, I think that's right. But wouldn't it be true that... even the kind of Christians that we would want to co-labor with would be attracted to a thrust rather than a weekly chit-chat. See, even let's say the Lord would bring us in contact with some Christian people, some Christian fellows and gals with whom we wanted to work. The kind of people that were primarily interested would be interested in us, and we in them, in the context of a moving evangelistic thrust, as opposed to a nice little sweet warm fellowship where you're all kind of gathered once a week and had kind of a mutual admiration society. And the kind of people that we're primarily interested in this work of ours is not the kind that like to sit and talk, but the kind that like to move out and do something for God. And if you get involved immediately then in a thrust, this other kind of person kind of loses interest in us. And they go find someone else to sit and talk with while we keep moving. Now, it's true, you see, like Harvey says, that we'll obviously, in this thrust, we'd pick up some raw new ones. And like you mentioned, the evangelistic idea, we would pick up some people right from scratch. But even the Christians, we can get so happy in our pleasant little time of sitting and talking, you know. And we're not really interested in the kind of people that that sort of thing draws. He's talking about a kind of person here. The kind of person that realizes the flag is down and we're moving into the beach, there's a war on, and they want to be in on it. Rather than the rear echelon individual who doesn't know that there's really a war out there. He hears rumors about it, but he doesn't really knows nothing of it firsthand. The kind of people. Now, if that's what he meant by it, do you agree with that? Do you think he's right? Bill, you're shaking your head over there. You think he's right on this?
Yes. Because this is, you pick up evangelical people on a thrust, or some thrust indicates something that is moving or progressing. If you're going to have a progressive area, or there must be something that's going to be replacing the old, and you have the old moving on.
Okay, good. Anybody else have a comment on this?
It's simply a matter of testing. It's going to be, it's hard to go on a thrust. And a man you catch on a thrust is a man who's willing to endure hardness for Christ.
Yeah.
He's the kind of man you want to work with.
Right. It saves a lot of time, doesn't it, Ed? To not start with this guy that's used to sitting, you know, and then try to build that fire. I would much rather have some wild-eyed guy that's got 10 bad ideas, but working them all, than one guy that's got no ideas and just sort of sits and, you know, you start to light the fire, and you light the match, and you light the fire, and no movement. Because you can steer the guy that's moving, but you can't steer someone who's sitting. He sits. He isn't steered. He's just sitting. But the one who's moving... We used to have a motto in the area. Let's do something, even if it's wrong. You know, let's do something. And that began to get circulated around the Glen. They didn't like that out here too well. So we changed it to, let's do something, it might be right. Gave it a positive attitude. Then they bought that a little more. But do we all understand now why he made that statement and what we're getting at here? Because a lot of what we'll be talking about from here on will be on this premise. That we're looking for a certain kind of person. The kind of person who wants to launch out, to do battle, to get in the conflict. And you get that kind of person not by forming a little static group, but by some sort of a dynamic outreach. Now, the next question would be, how do you begin this thrust? And I'll share with you two or three things out of my own experience here that just how God has led me. But as we progress, we'll see that there's no particular pattern. But there are some things that you might pick up from each other's experience and from mine. When I went to Pittsburgh, this was my first assignment with the Navigators. I'd been in the nest up till this time. I had a big mother bird around me, and I spoon-fed and protected me, and I was there, you know, kind of in the security of the nest. And then Dawson Troutman came to me one summer out here at Star Ranch before we had the Glen. He said, I think it's time for you to move on and get on your own. He said, there are 7 places right now that we need a man. Would you take these 7 places and pray over them tonight and come up to me tomorrow morning and see what the Lord, what you think God would have you do? Fine. So I spent most of the night in prayer on the thing. And I was Dawson's first appointment the next morning, which was at 5 o'clock in the morning. He had rather heavy days, you know, scheduling appointments during conferences. I won't name all the towns, but Pittsburgh was one of them. And as I prayed over this thing, it looked like Pittsburgh was the place God would have me go. So when I shared this with Doss, he said, great! And he showed me how he had all written down that that's what God, the way the Lord had led him in thinking about the thing. So we were together on it, and I took it from the Lord. When I got to Pittsburgh, I didn't have one clue of how to begin or what to do. Didn't have the faintest idea. Here I was in this great big town, you know, nobody around. Some hick farmer from out here in Iowa somewhere, down this great big city, the metropolis. I was really out of my element. So I thought, well, I better pray and seek some guidance and direction from the Lord. And I spent 3 weeks in prayer, morning, noon, and night, on the third floor of this big house we were living in. We had a big ping pong table up there, and I just walked around and around this ping pong table, and I'd get down for lunch, and I'd come back up, and I would read the Word and pray, read the Word and pray, read the Word and pray, seeking the Lord on what to do. I didn't have any idea what to do, just trying to find out what to do. And the Lord laid on my heart the matter of college witnessing at the university. And so I was asking the Lord, well, what kind of college witnessing? What do I do? How do I start this thing? And I was reading in this old Bible, just sort of going through the Old Testament. And this is my loose leaf here. And as I was going through it, I came across 1 Samuel 14. I'll share this with you now. It won't take long, and you might see a principle here. You might get an idea. This was not to be duplicated. This is just to stimulate your thinking and give you an idea. As I was going through 1 Samuel 14, I came across verse 6. And Jonathan said to the young man that bears armor, come, let us go over unto the garrison of this uncircumcised, to these uncircumcised, and may be that the Lord will work for us, for there's no restraint to the Lord, save by many or by few. And his armor bearer, this is verse 7 now, his armor bearer said unto him, do all that is in thine heart. Turn thee, behold, I am with thee according to thine heart. Now I got a principle out of verse 8. Well, I got a principle out of verse 7 too. Let's get out and do something, even if it looks cockeyed. Let's do it. This is a rather dumb plan, you know, here that they launched out on. Two men attacking a whole garrison. Not really too logical. But they were going to just go out and see what God would do. Verse 8. Then said Jonathan, behold, we will pass over unto these men, and we will discover ourselves to them. I thought, aha, there's an idea. I'll just go over to campus and make myself known to somebody. And then I thought, why don't I walk up to a fraternity house? Cold. And knock on the door and tell them who I am and what I'm doing, what I want to do, and see what their reaction is. Verse 9, if they say thus unto us, tarry until we come unto you, then we'll stand still in our place and we will not go into them. In other words, if they say, don't call us, we'll call you, well, then I'll take it from the Lord, they didn't want us in. But, verse 10, if they say thus, come up unto us, then we will go up. For the Lord hath delivered them into our hand, and this shall be a sign unto us. Now there's an idea. I'll knock on the door, and I'll say, I'm Leroy Imes, and I would like to come preach the gospel to you. And then if they say, well, don't call us, we'll call you, that'll be one, I'll know that that's not what we're supposed to do. If they say, well, come on up unto us, then I'll know that God has given them into our hand. So I had that much light. Verse 11, and both of them discover themselves, and both of them, I thought, I better take a man with me. So I began to look around for a guy to take with. And both of them discover themselves under the garrison of the Philistines, and the Philistines said, behold, the Hebrews come forth out of their holes where they've hid themselves. And I thought, well, now we might get a little opposition here, a little ridicule. They might say, all these little Christians, they've crawled out of their holes, now they're going to come over and talk to us about God. Isn't that sweet? And I expected some ridicule in all this. Didn't get much, but I expected some. And the men of the garrison answered Jonathan, his armor bearer, and said, come up unto us, and we will show you a thing. And Jonathan said to his armor bearer, come up after me, for the Lord hath delivered them into the hand of Israel. Aha, there it is now. No hesitation, even though there may be a chip on their shoulder. Okay, come on in. Fine, we'll go in. No hesitation. Verse 14, at that first slaughter, which Jonathan and his armor bearer made, was about 20 men. So I wrote down in my the margin of this Bible a good number to start praying for. So I started praying for 20 men, 20 converts from the first semester of work. And I'd never even set foot on campus yet. I'd never been inside a fraternity house in my life. I didn't know what one looked like, to be honest with you. I'd never even seen one to my recollection. But I was praying for 20 converts. And there was a trembling in the field and so on, and the garrison of the spoilers, and it trembled, and the earthquake, and there was a great trembling. And I thought, aha, if God gives us 20 men, that place will be shaken. And the watchmen of Saul and Gibeah and Benjamin looked, and behold, the multitude melted away, and they went on beating down one another. I thought, reproduction. If I can get one of them saved, then he goes and beats down his buddy, That'll be a good plan. So I began to pray for reproduction in this thing. Verse 20. Saul and all the people that were assembled themselves, they came to the battle, and behold, every man's sword was against his fellow, and there's a great discomfiture. Moreover, it says in verse 21, the Hebrews that were with the Philistines before that time, which went up with them into the camp from the country round about, even they also turned to be with Israel, that were with Saul and Jonathan. I thought, now, you know, I'm going to find some Christians who are hiding out in these fraternity houses who have been with the heathen up to this time. But if we really, if God blesses this thing, we'll see some Christians crawl up out of their little holes in that fraternity house and make themselves known as Christians. Verse 22, likewise all the men of Israel which hid themselves in Mount Ephraim, and so on, they also followed hard after the battle. Verse 23, so the Lord saved Israel that day, and the battle passed over into Beth-Aven. Well, I jotted down here, weak Christians will join up and fight. And verse 23, and then after this gets going, we'll move on to Carnegie Tech and Penn State and other campuses. I had this battle all won before I ever left the third floor apartment, my third floor room in this house we were living in. Had it all doped out. I had a clear plan, and I was sure that God was leading in this thing. Well, we went, knocked on the door, they said, come in. At the first fraternity, there were five men saved the next morning after that night. Began to work with them. Pretty soon these guys began to go with us to other fraternity houses. They'd stand up and they'd say, these fellows came to our house, and they told us a story like they're going to tell you in a few minutes, and here's what God has done for me. And they began to testify, going on beating down one another. Reproduction. And sure enough, the battle did pass over to Carnegie Tech and Penn State. And I got all the guys together at the end of the first semester, all the converts, over to our house, and we sat around, and suddenly occurred to me, hey, why don't I count these guys? 20 men. Well, now, see, this all began when I started on the basis of a thrust. But I didn't just get there and start flailing around and beating the air and starting here and starting there. But I got before God, settled down on this third floor, and prayed for 3 weeks, and sought the Lord. And God gave me something out of His Word that I claimed as my own, and moved ahead on the thing. Now I think there is a principle of how to begin a thrust. But it doesn't all work the same way. When I went to the Midwest, I had my direction from the book of Acts. And I think I'll be sharing more with you that tonight. But the direction came from the book of Acts. And I saw four things that we should major in. And began to major in these four things. And then the Lord, the Bible goes there, this Bible goes here. The Lord gave me a promise early in the game. I think it was about a week after I got to Omaha. And I was praying and asking the Lord for a promise in this case. Not so much direction as to what to do, but a promise of what He would do. And He gave me this verse. And I began to pray over this verse. Then the heathen that are left round about you shall know that I, the Lord, build the ruined places and plant that was desolate. I, the Lord, have spoken it, and I will do it. Thus saith the Lord God, I will yet for this be inquired of by the house of Israel to do it for them. I will increase them with men like a flock. As the flock of God, as the flock of Jerusalem in their solemn feast, so shall the waste cities be filled with flocks of men, and they shall know that I am the Lord. And I claim that for the Midwest, for Omaha and the work round about, and ask God to give us men, men in lots of cities, and lots of men to come out of that place, and to really launch out into the work of the Lord. But that was the difference, you see. I wasn't same pattern, but it was still a matter of prayer, seeking the Lord, seeking His Word, claiming promises. Prayer, taking enough time to get some clear direction from God. That, I think, is a basic principle on the thrust. Now, I have a little outline here. By the way, once a month, our department, the U.S. Area Department, we send out a letter to our area reps. every month except, you know, once a month except summertime. I sort of gave it up for Lent and summertime. But the other fall, winter, and spring months, why we send this letter out. And I shared in this letter this idea that I'm sharing with you, only I didn't enlarge on it. And Lauren's first comment here was, prayerfully determine your area of attack or pool of manpower. After you've got your thrust, after you know what it'll be, and after you have an idea, say, and you've prayed and so on, then prayerfully determine your area of attack or pool of manpower or gal power. Now, let me ask some questions here. Go through this thing, see if I can find Sandy Haig. I think I brought Sandy. Sandy, there you are. You're in the Los Angeles area, aren't you? Now, for you yourself, Sandy, what is your primary area of witness? Is it an office where you work or a campus? Is you going to school? What are you doing? What's your
UCLA?
Are you with two or three other girls, or trying to have some kind of thrust going, or are you just witnessing to your fellow classmates, or what are you doing right now in this matter?
Well, this last year, it's been just individual work, but this coming fall, Kathy Carlson and myself and my cousin are going to try to work up something with the Pasadena area through Chuck Farah and get a team with me out there.
Mm-hmm.
And Joanne Nelson was talking, and possibly the idea of getting an apartment out toward Westwood and working from that, but we're not sure about that. But trying to get something going in the way of teamwork out there, because it's really needed. And a lot has been happening on the campus just through individual work and through Campus Crusade and InterVarsity.
Mm-hmm.
Some real good things. So it's looking real good. So we're hoping to really develop something in the fall.
Good. Joyce, what's going on in the D.C. area among the girls this summer?
Well, we have an apartment. Six of us go together. And we have Operation White Harvest, so those girls coming in and we'll go out in teams of two and take surveys and apartments where we all live. And that's their one, that's our main interest right now, getting into apartments with girls, five or six in a room. They go in and take surveys and get opportunities to visit us.
Now, this is Operation White Harvest. This is the girls' end of things.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Are you living with Nancy? And you split up in twos.
Mm-hmm.
How often do you go out?
Two times a week. A month. Well, we average once a week. We've been trying two times a week.
Mm-hmm. Shooting for two times a week. How do you have friends, or do you have people that you know in these apartments you can go talk to, or is this primarily cold turkey stuff?
It's cold. Pretty cold. We use the fact that one of us lives in the apartment where we're going, usually. I live in apartment 37, and we do that, so.
Oh, I think I. You live in an apartment in a big apartment building.
Yes.
And you're using that big apartment building as your. I get it. Okay. Do you go to other apartment buildings?
Yes. See, there are about 15 girls involved in the program, and of these 15, there are other apartment buildings that they live in. And we go in the buildings where we live, and we go in the buildings where Vera Van Cleef lives,
mm-hmm.
Joni, and so on.
I see. I live down in apartment 37, and pretty good idea.
Oh, I think
so. What have you seen by way of results thus far this summer? Have you seen some gals come to know the Lord?
Three. I guess 2 weeks ago, one. Faye Hill. Gave her heart to Christ as a result of the survey that I took in her parish.
Hmm. That's terrific.
Mm-hmm.
That's exciting. Now, your pool of manpower is the campus, UCLA. You're there as a student, and you witness to your buddies and your friends and so on. That's quite a pool of manpower, a gal power.
And Kathy is leading one of the girls' residence halls, so that's a good place to be.
Mm-hmm. And with Joyce here now, it's her own apartment dwelling, and then other apartment dwellings where some of the other gals live around D.C. Do you ever try to go to places where you don't have an inside contact?
Yes, yeah. Over at the building where at one time Nancy did live, but she doesn't know anyone there now. And we've gone down to the train station. We've gone to George Washington University and American University.
Mm-hmm. Good. Stan, tell us about, well, I don't know what you're doing this summer. What are you doing this summer? You got any buddies you're working on, or what's happening this summer?
Yes, as a matter of fact, my area of concentration is within the Methodist Church Hour this summer. I live in North Platte, Nebraska, which is near Maranatha, where I get to run out quite often in the evening. But my work is primarily concerned with getting the youth in the Methodist Church interested by way of Bible study, discussion groups, if I could.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been very productive already, which is just seems like it's just getting started. We've got a Bible study where we have five students who are very interested. We're going through a preparatory Bible study. I don't know if you're familiar with this. It's a question and answer in the book of John. And one of the boys in there, I'm sure, is a Christian already. And it's just amazing to see the spiritual revivals in their own lives, just getting back to the Word.
Hmm.
They've missed out on for so long.
Are these high school fellows, college fellows, junior high? What?
Most of them are in senior high or ready to go to college.
You got five of them, you say?
There's five. They're definitely interested. They're very faithful.
Mm-hmm. Stan is a student at the University of Nebraska, and his home is North Platte. So I'm encouraging to hear that rather than settle down and kind of idle during the summer, waiting to get back to his pool of manpower, he's got another one going. That's helpful. See, your name is what now?
Ron Jackson.
Where are you from, Ron?
Seattle.
Ron Jackson. Did you sneak into this class?
No.
Oh, here it is. Okay. Ron, what is your pool of manpower for witness around Seattle?
Well, I'm in the Seattle City College.
Mm-hmm.
And this year will be mostly with the leaders on the campus, I think. I think our primary goal would be to begin with the leaders and to encourage them to locate themselves, and then to reach down with the lower classmen by prayer cells. Tom Jarrett here and I will be probably working together on the campus.
Now, is SPC primarily a Christian school? Is it 90% Christian, 10%, or is it 95-5, or what would you say is your situation there?
Well, it's about, I'd say 90% Christian.
I was in a Christian school for a while. Couple years, and to locate a pool of manpower and really get active in evangelism is kind of a tough project, I found. I don't know how you find it there, but it's a little hard. Has anyone had any real success? Have you gone to a Christian school where you saw success in doing? Bill?
I haven't, but my goal, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
And we've prayed over many of the Lord's really, but this is one of the only times I've ever seen it happen.
One of the things that the Lord led me to do was to launch out away from campus into some other campus or another base or something else. See, the problem that I faced was that here I was with all the rest of these fishermen. We were all located here. All these fishermen were stacked here. And over here was the University of Minnesota. Here was Hamline University. Here was McAllister. And here were all the fish, you know. So here were all the fish over here, and here were all the fishermen over here. And then it suddenly hit me, hey, what an idea. What do you say we get the fishermen with the fish? You know, what a plan. And kind of revolutionary idea to me. So, we worked at getting the fishermen over to where the fish were. And when you say you're going to work with the leaders, one idea, I don't know how you could work it, but when I was in Pittsburgh, my project was to take these seminary students over to the campus. We formed teams of four men, and we hit these fraternities in teams of four, and got these seminary guys into an area where they could find the fish, you see, and taught them to witness. While they were in seminary, and taught them to build men and train men while they were in seminary, so that when they got out of seminary, they're still doing it. And when I go and I preach in their churches and so on, why they introduce me to the men that they've won to Christ and are building up in the faith. So it's really quite exciting. But if you can get some of these guys, Tom, get the fish, fishermen with the fish, it might see some real production there. What is your primary area of witness up there, Tom?
University of Washington in Fort Lewis right now. We do mostly freelancing at the University of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
But Fort Lewis, of course, Doug Houck is there.
Yes.
And Dave Cucci.
Mm-hmm.
We go out Thursday night and pick up the troops.
Mm-hmm.
Take four or five guys with us. A couple live in the home there in Seattle. A couple from the campus, the university.
Mm-hmm.
Two from Fort Lawton, and go down, sort of show them how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll be going back and using some of the guys from Seattle Pacific, working through the University Christian Union here on campus this fall, going out and evangelism and so forth.
I noticed now Sally mentioned once a week project. You mentioned every Thursday. I think it's a good idea to schedule this, to try to figure out something. If you don't, now in some cases it's just impossible. In some cases you don't need it, like Sandy over here. Or Sandy, that's right, Sandy. She's there all the time. She doesn't schedule anything. She's just easy pickings. But some of us really have to schedule this now, and just like you have to schedule your quiet time. Well, you have to schedule this and just do it. Ed, I was going to call on one more. What is your particular pool of manpower for witness and so on up there at New York or in Jersey City?
Well, right now school's out, so things have sort of switched. Interestingly enough, I think perhaps the most fruitful work in the past year has been with the street gang in New York City. And here a couple of fellows, one who's just arrived, George Vandenbender, has been having a very effective ministry here. Having been brought up in these circumstances, he's just gone out in the streets, met the kids, and then he has a use of a church basement, which has a gym in it, UN, had a basketball game, and afterwards been just having a gospel shot at him.
Mm-hmm.
Out of this, there's been about, well, there's been 12 professions, about five who seem to be coming through and are going on. It's very difficult work, mostly with Puerto Rican Negro fellows, and the biggest problem there is sin. It's real wicked. And then the other situation on campuses, the best have been a couple of small schools. One is Phoenix Tech in Hoboken, which is a good new engineering school.
Mm-hmm.
Got a lot of dorms right on campus. It's isolated, in fact, it's right in the middle of the slums, so the students don't go off campus much.
Mm-hmm.
Around there, so they'd be sitting around there in the evenings and you can walk in on. And the other is teacher's college.
That one kind of out of way?
Yeah, Montclair State.
Yeah, Montclair State.
We've got a good little Bible study going there now. It's a simplified ABC, which won the following with King Lord last year through the PMS.
Mm-hmm.
Has been reading the study.
Tell the rest of the group what you do, what your job is up there.
I'm teaching here at the Seton Hall College of Medicine. I meet with a few guys from the college, but I don't try to use the students there because fellows in medical school are simply not available.
Yeah.
And all I do is try to encourage Christians and testify them if they have an opportunity.
There's all kinds of ideas, aren't there, on this prayer for determining your own personal pool of manpower or gal power and what this will be. Now, are we all clear on what we mean by pool of manpower? Or pool of gal power? Al, what do we mean by this?
Well, pool of manpower, what I think it means is that you have some people that you can rely on are those who are following you in the work of evangelism.
Now, in a limited sense, that's right. But in a broader sense, there's more to it than that. Lauren, what do you think we mean by pool of manpower?
So a pool of manpower is where you're going to dip in to produce your men. If you might be working, say, in a college where from this college you can produce men, and this is where your evangelistic thrust is. Actually, it's just like a pool of water where your fish are.
Mm-hmm. This is the, in the broader sense, this is the fishing pond. It may be your neighborhood where you live and getting a few wives together. It may be a college campus. It may be a military installation. It may be the ship you're on. Wherever your natural contact with people, or even unnatural for that matter, it's not really natural for Joyce here to go to some apartment house, you know, and witness. But where there are people that you're concerned for Christ, it's not natural for Dr. Ed here to go down and work with these Puerto Rican street gangs, but it's, you know, it's where some people are and they need Christ. Where there are people that you can get to and work with them, that's our pool of manpower. Now, Lauren says that the pool of manpower and our evangelistic thrust should be unprogrammed but carefully planned and have follow-up potential. Our evangelistic thrust should be carefully planned but unprogrammed with follow-up potential. Unprogrammed. We don't need a president, a vice president, a secretary, a treasurer, a meeting of the board of directors, a meeting of the junior council committee, and all this Mickey Mouse to go out and witness to somebody. But we need something that's carefully planned. We need to know what we're doing and why and how to go about it. That's the plan with follow-up potential. Now, Joyce mentioned that they go down to the train depot. Now, that's terrific training. So is going on the street in Colorado Springs. That's good training, but it doesn't have much follow-up potential, really. If you go to a train and you witness somebody, guess what? They're going to leave. They're there to go bye-bye. They're not going to be around. So the best pool of the two, of course, Joyce knows this, and we all do, is the apartment where they come back night after night after night. Now you can get to them. Unprogrammed, carefully planned, with follow-up potential. This is the idea of the pool of manpower. Oh, Russ, go ahead.
Would you go in this carefully planned bit a little bit?
Yes. No, I'd rather save that till tomorrow when we get into one of the passages of Scripture. Let me save it. We're going to touch on it a little bit, but I'd like to hit that harder tomorrow. Al?
What do you do? Do you get an idea from the Lord and you use Scripture to substantiate this as from the Lord and then you move out?
Now that's the way that God has led me, but I would not say that as you're praying and the Lord lays something on your heart, you don't necessarily need a verse or a passage or anything before you can go. This is just the way the Lord has led in these two circumstances that I mentioned. But it is important to pray and ask God to lay something on your heart. And then if he confirms it with a clear plan like he did with me in 1 Samuel, or if he just lays it on your heart and you have the compulsion to go, and from the training and background that you've had, you know what to do. See, I didn't know what to do. But it is important to have something that's on your heart. Now, one of the pools of manpower that the NAVs are primarily interested in, this is our major thrust around the world, is the military. And we talk about, Jim Downing says, preferably shipboard personnel and isolated bases. Now, Rush, you work pretty closely with Jim, and you know probably as much as anybody in the network what's going on among military around the world. Why do you think he says preferably shipboard or isolated bases?
Less distraction.
Less to get involved in all the glitter and all the glamour and so on.
And also it gives them an opportunity to apply what we're teaching them. You get a guy here at Fort Carson, not particularly an isolated base. He gets sort of lost in the big programs.
Mm-hmm.
You get a guy, there's one guy up in Alaska. He says the chaplain's here one week out of the month, and so the other 3 weeks I'm conducting the services. Well, he's applying what he's learned.
Mm-hmm. How about aboard a ship? You got any examples of shipboard work?
Yeah, it's the same principle. I've never been on a ship, so
I mean, the letters you get and guys that you know are moving
right,
ahead.
Right. A lot of ships don't have chaplains, and so I have what they call the lay leader.
Mm-hmm.
And quite often, a guy will start moving to the front, and the captain, he says, well, this is a religious guy. Make him the lay leader. He doesn't know any difference.
Mm-hmm.
And so they make him the lay leader, and he conducts the services. Well, I couldn't get any better opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that these two reasons, the distractions aren't there, and then they get concerned about the men. You get a place like Fort Carson, 28,000 men, we just sort of get lost. There's, you know, seems like an impossible task. Well, there's isolated base in Turkey where there are 400 men, 10 guys. This one guy found there were 10 Christians on the base. So he said, well, let's start praying that we can reach all 400. Well, now they're up to 25 guys.
Hmm.
And they feel that they can obtain this goal, and mm-hmm. they're working at it. But there are probably 40,000 guys there. They probably figured, let's keep our 10 guys here together. And
yeah. Hold the fort, huh? Al?
I want you to believe, too, that because on a base, isolation like this, and on ships and on campus, it's more static. They're there a good part of the time, and you can keep continual contact, and that's one of your definitions of follow-up potential.
Yeah, that's right. A shipboard personnel, there's great follow-up potential there. So with an isolated base, but not with a place, not as well with a place where they can run the town all the time, where it's free liberty and the gates are open, there's lots to do in town. We don't find as good a working condition for our particular type of thrust as we do in the smaller. Maybe I should, yeah, okay. Doris.
We had one real good example in Norfolk, the big nuclear power carrier, the Enterprise.
Yes. Yeah, now the Enterprise, as I remember when we were back there for that conference, they were working like crazy to get all the ammo unloaded so they could come to our conference. There were about, as I remember, 15, 20 men that are moving ahead for the Lord on that one ship. Who's the spark plug out there?
Bill Baumgartner.
Yeah, that's right, Bill Baumgartner. The Lord is doing real work on this particular ship. And some of us have been praying about it. It's kind of one of the key ships in the Navy, you know, this big nuclear-powered deal, and gets a lot of headlines, but he's back on the East Coast. But God's got his own headlines, you know, with what's really going on in the ship. We're excited about that. Any other comments concerning the military? Work among the military and the isolated base or the shipboard personnel. The next major thrust in our work is the thrust among the collegians, the college crowd. And it was amazing to me that Jim Downing and I had come to the same conclusions. We got together and compared notes one time, and I said, Jim, we get more done if we're in a large school that has dormitories that's located in a small town where there's not much to do than we do in a place where there's a large school but doesn't have dorms and is located in a big town. And so then he shared this isolated base idea with me and the shipboard personnel. Now, I found a place that I think that would be my next move. It's called Miami of Ohio. There are 8,000 students, all live in dorms. There's a town of 4,000 people, and no student is allowed to own an automobile. Drool, drool, drool. Imagine that. Can you feature a place like that? The town isn't even large enough to be put on the central U.S. map. I think it's called Oxford, Ohio. But there they are. 8,000 of them.
You're not dreaming, are you?
No, sir, that's a fact. I got this in black and white. Now, we don't stick with this principle. I mean, this is not a hard, fast rule. Our major thrust in Dallas, for instance, is the college crowd. Minneapolis. Well, Minneapolis is no small bird. Dallas is no small bird. Los Angeles, Pasadena is no small bird. You know, Pasadena is, but not the Los Angeles area. So we don't set up and say, now this is it, you know, and put on blinders, and that's all we see. But this is a general trend. And this is a real good place for some of our younger crop to go out and try their wings, like Doss had me do in Pittsburgh. I'd really like to see some young couple move to Oxford, Ohio, and settle down and just see what happens. We have Bill and Eleanor Arndt here at the Glen now this summer. They'll be going to Kansas State. Kansas State is a huge, huge school, as you all know, but a little tinky town, yeah, that's right, a little tinky town back there in Kansas. Manhattan, Kansas. Got a nice hotel in it, and the guy that runs the hotel is a Christian, and every time he gets a chance, he tells about, he gives his testimony, and but it's a little small bird, but a good pool. Stillwater, Oklahoma is not a very big town, but Oklahoma State's located there. And here's something else we found about this college business, the pool of manpower, still on this idea. There are two categories of schools, a party school and a study school. Iowa State is a study school. Iowa University is a party school. Kansas State is a study school. Kansas University is a party school. And we could go right around, the University of Pittsburgh is a party school. Penn State is a study school. University of Pennsylvania is a party school. So we're interested in Penn State. Just visualize the state of Pennsylvania like this. Draw a line right like that. There is Penn State, right in the middle, out in the middle of the mountains. Nothing around for miles and miles and miles. You go to that school, and here's this huge campus, and then you've got this little small Dairy Queen. You've got this little... So these farmers walk in there, you know, their bib overalls, these old Dutchmen, you know, they send their kids there to study. They walk in, look around, they discover in the wrong uniform, you know. They don't have the Ivy League and the black tie, see? So they hurry down to this little store and buy their uniform and put it on, and then they're set for the rest of the... And that's all there is to do. They're in uniform now, but there's nothing to do with the uniform, see? So there they stand. Well, I get kind of drooly over that school. I think, man, why? Now, young businessmen, another prime target. And God is at work through our people in this realm of young businessmen. In Oklahoma City, there are people coming to Christ through people that are very close to the man's down there. And this is a situation where if we would send an aviator to Oklahoma City, we'd kill it. See, these people don't know any better than just do what they're doing down there. And if we went down there, then they'd wait and see what you'd do. And, you know, then they'd... But not so now. They're really moving. Ed?
I just wanted to ask a question, but how do you approach these young businessmen? Like, New York City now is loaded with young businessmen.
Yeah.
But you can't lay your hands on them. They're all commuting into work and heading out. I just was wondering how can you... this doesn't seem to be like a pool.
Walt?
I use Kiwanis as a tremendous tool to contact these guys. Or any of your service.
That was Dick Alverson's recommendation, to use one of your service clubs.
Well, they don't exist in New York City, really.
Yeah. Now, in Chicago, who knows Hugh Mitchell's testimony on this, what he's doing? You familiar with this? Hugh Mitchell has what he calls office evangelism. And they have these huge, huge office buildings downtown Chicago in the Loop. Hugh will go in, go up to the secretary, and say, "Could I see your boss? Who's calling, please? Mr. Mitchell. What's it about? A personal matter." Sometimes he gets the boss, sometimes he doesn't. Depends on the mood of the secretary, you know, how it would be. And Hugh has come out with some of the most outlandish stories of what God has done in these things. And Hugh would say, he goes in and he says something like this. I don't have it real straight, but it's something like this. Mr. So-and-so, my name is Hubert Mitchell. And I'm vitally interested in businessmen, the needs of businessmen, and the spiritual welfare of our community. And this morning I read something so rich in the Bible that I would like to read it to you. All I ask is 3 minutes. After 3 minutes, so I'll leave. Do you mind if I would just read something out of the Bible? No. So Hugh would just read something out of the Bible. And then give a brief word of testimony to Kaisa and say, well, goodbye, sir. Been nice talking to you. And then I'll say, well, can you stay a little while? Sit down, have coffee, you know, or something. And it's turned into hours with some of these fellas. He went to the president of Shenley Liquor and walked in. Here was, you know, Shenley, and walked in and sat down with the president, and they had coffee, I guess. Although, knowing Hugh, it probably wouldn't really matter if he had a chance to witness to the guy. No, not really. But this is one thing that Hugh is doing. Now, with your crew in Oklahoma City, they've got a band of about Humphreys, Potter, War. Oh, let's see. They have, I would say, 8 to 10 men. And it's through a lot of socializing. They invite their friends over, and then they'll invite someone to come in and have a little devotional at the end or something. Pretty straightforward bunch. But they've got the advantage of having all these guys together in heart. For instance, our next conference is a busload coming from Oklahoma City. All young businessmen coming here to the Glen. A busload. Does anyone else have any suggestions on this young businessman idea? Bill?
Not a suggestion, but a question. You mentioned Hugh Mitchell going into these various places. Well, that's limited to some professional type of minister or otherwise going into them, because the other professional personnel are at work the same hours as these are, and therefore
yes, and one thing that Hugh has done, he's asked businessmen to go with him, say, take an hour coffee break today. Or, you know, and those that can, he takes them with. He usually goes two by two with another man. And then these guys get the picture. And now they're going out by themselves, doing the same thing Hugh is doing. So just floor after floor after floor, you know how these things are. And they don't really exhaust their... But that's true. Until the guy gets the picture, those that can, those that have the kind of position where they can get off, and some of them are going out now, just cold. But even in spite of this cold idea, Hugh told me, when I took him to the airport, when he's out here telling us about this, that they even find it in businessmen, it's better to work through a contact. If this businessman knows him, and Hugh's a buddy with this businessman, say, well, you introduce me to him then, and to work through the difference between warm and cold contact. And we found this in college witnessing. I know the guys have found it true in the bases and so on in the military. We found it true at the university, Lincoln Air Force Base, and at Offutt Air Force Base when I was witnessing out there, going through someone. Well, we've got to move along here. Tomorrow, I'd like to have you do this. We talked about determining our area of attack. Well, that assumes there will be an attack. By tomorrow, at class time, I'd like to have you read through these three passages. Deuteronomy 20, 1 Thessalonians 1, 2, and 3, and 1 Samuel 17. And come up with what principles you can find there as to what the objective is of this warfare of ours, and how do we go about to fulfill our objective. In other words, what we're doing and how we do it. Out of those three passages. Go over them again.
Not the rephrase that what we're supposed to be looking for.
All right. Well, 1 Thessalonians 2:1, Paul says, you know, brethren, when we came to you, we achieved our objective. He said, our entrance into you was not in vain. It was not fruitless. One translation says, we achieved our objective. So I would like to know from these th- three passages what you think the objective is. What is the objective? We're going out to witness now, let's say. Let's use witnessing as our thrust. What's the objective in this battle we're talking about, this warfare? And then, the principles of achieving our objective. Now, these are very clear passages on this. Take Deuteronomy 20. Those of you that have little things written at the top of your Bible, little titles at the top, you notice on Deuteronomy 20 it says, laws to be observed in time of war. Well, it's pretty easy to find out then what the principles of warfare are and how to go about achieving these principles. Laws to be observed in time of war. Well, that's one passage we should study then. We're talking about battle here. Let's find out what the principles of war are according to the Scripture. And train, here's another point. Point, whatever this is, B. Train men in here of influence to your home or to your apartment. Or always have the gals coming over to your place. You go out to where they are and meet their friends. And Lauren calls this a going concern. It means that we are going to them. And Ezekiel 22:30, in my mind, has this principle there. I sought for a man among them to make up the hedge and stand in the gap before me for the land that I should not destroy. And I found none. A man among them. One of my big problems with Dave Dawson when I was working with him at Lincoln at the university was that he always wanted to leave his base and come in and be the leader of a Baptist young people's in town. Here he was kind of a big wheel, you know, and his shiny uniform. And all the ooh-ah, you know, they'd kind of marvel at his abilities with the Scriptures, and they thought he was a big deal. Now, fortunately, he did have a ministry and a witness on base. But a lot of these guys, the reason they leave base is because they're considered a thoroughgoing meathead on base. So in order to, quote, do anything for the Lord, they've got to trickle off somewhere and get a little thing going over here, see, with the Baptist young people. But a man among them is what God was looking for. So when you're working with your gals and when you're working with your guys, see if you can get this principle across to them that they're to witness where they are. If they're in a sorority house, let them witness in that sorority house. If they're in a barracks, that's their pool of manpower. That's their fishing pond. And not always trying to run off. Stan?
To what extent now do you want them to stay within this sphere of influence as long as it's detracting from their own fishing maturity?
Well, As far as the whole fraternity system is concerned, personally, I think the whole thing stinks. We've discussed this at length. But if, Stan, a guy is in there and can maintain a witness and feels that God is put him there, then it'd be the worst thing in the world to leave. But it depends on whether he feels God would have him there. But I personally think that the whole idea... Now, I like some of the things they produce. But as far as a gospel, a really opportunity to use one of these things, there are just a lot of complicating factors, as you well know. But you're in this fraternity, and God has given you a witness there, Tom and these other fellows that I've met. Well, these fellows, they need help. God has put you there. I think it'd be wrong for you to leave. And maybe not. It depends on the way God's working in your heart. But I'm personally not much in sympathy with this fraternity sorority idea. But if God put a man there, you stay there. You should try to provide some kind of group fellowship for this man in his own environment. That's point C. Provide group fellowship in his own environment. Stan here. He has a Bible study or gets together with Tom. And what's that big guy that's coming to the Lord now, the tall fellow?
Jim,
right. There should be some sort of fellowship among these guys in that fraternity house. With Joyce over here in her apartment and the other girls' apartment, they should try to get some kind of group fellowship for them right where they are. And on the base, we used to go out to Lincoln Air Force Base and conduct Bible studies or lead Bible studies for the guys where they were, right on that base, rather than always bringing them off base. But it's good to use the home, and it's good to get them out. because getting them away from this place. See, the home can be used as a base of operations, not a center of operations. And your home and your apartment can be used as a kind of a base and bring people over for this, as Lauren calls it, kind of getting the batteries recharged before launching back into the battle. And I know that Nancy does this back there. Let's gals come in and spend overnight or a weekend in the apartment just for the fellowship and the mutual encouragement. And use your apartment, your home, to bring them over and let them get away. There are a number of other things you can do. Oh, Jim, excuse me.
I wanted to ask about, suppose different fellows have different groups that they're working with. How do you
yeah, I see.
Get these groups together, like Marv's guys with the fellows I'm working with, and Bob's fellows, and so forth?
Now, I don't know whether it was just me or what, but we had a thrust going at Lincoln Air Force Base and at the university. And I was never able to mix these guys too well. Now, it may have just been me, I don't know. But they just didn't seem, they didn't have the same common interests, and, except girls. But other than that, there wasn't the common interest somehow. They weren't able to mix too well. And I don't really know the answer to that.
Don't you think that if you had different people working with different groups of people, but in the same situation, like both college people, then it would be much easier to mix?
Yes, I think it would be. I know Lauren has said overseas, in her overseas work, it's hard to mix the nationals with the servicemen. And so we've got them completely split. We've got nationals under Sanchez and servicemen under Downing, overseas servicemen. And it's a whole different world.
You're right.
Mm-hmm.
Although it may not have worked real successfully, I think it accomplished a big thing, because we got to see the servicemen as they came out, and we were praying more for Russ's in their ministry.
Yes.
As we saw them. And there was more of a uniting force there.
And we did have one-day retreats at the island.
Sure.
With both servicemen and college guys. But that wasn't the kind of thing just fellowshipping around the home. That was more of an organized deal. A one-day retreat. I know the Bay Area with Crawford out there used these one-day deals. They take servicemen. Now, have you tried to mix college crowd into that when you take these servicemen up? Kruger, have you mixed any there?
No, not too much.
Kept the servicemen off and take them off into the hills and have a one day with them. That seems to work the best, just generally. Tom?
We mix it.
Do you?
The University of Washington, we had two fellas go down with us to Fort Lewis on Thursday night. I didn't see any problem.
No, now... no, there is no problem in it. To go down to their base and witness to them. But just in the long-range fellowshipping around the home... Good. Stay at it. Stay at
it.
Don't start a problem where there is none. He mixes them.
Business, it's business.
Business and servicemen.
Mm-hmm. Well, part of it depends upon their educational background. Are these guys over here, they had some college training that you're mixing?
The ones from Fort Lawton have it.
Oh.
Well, one of them has. I haven't myself had any college training.
I think it just, you know, play it by ear. What works, do it. What doesn't seem to work. But we didn't find that it worked too well. Like I said, that just could have been the way we were handling it. Point D into this business of consolidation is to get set for opposition. Because there's going to be some come from some quarter. Now, I must admit, in my own ministry and life, I've never really faced much. And that may have been because I've tried to keep the machinery oiled and keep the operation oiled with public relations and checking through and all. But even in spite of all this, you face some little sniping, you know, little people getting behind trees and sniping away. But my basic theory on this is to claim a verse of Scripture and get on with the job and let it melt away and not fight back. You see, it takes two people to make a fight. And if you won't fight back, this guy has a hard time getting a fight going. Lauren?
Well, I've had quite a bit of experience with opposition this last year. And like one example,
we had this woman, assistant registrar, go around to every person in our Bible study and tell them not to get mixed up in it. And so finally, just went to her and told her if she had, if she went to anyone else, we'd want to see her before the president of the school. And that stopped her.
what was her motive in all that, Thorne?
Well, she was a rank liberal, and she didn't want anybody to get in the Bible, and she was just...
was this at Chapman College?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's the denominational background at Chapman?
It's Disciples of Christ.
See, now here's one thing that we've never really been able to overcome, and that is when you're trying to work on a liberal Christian campus, or liberal Christian, liberal religious campus that has a religious background and base to it, they're much harder than a plain old, good old, juicy state university, you know. So admittedly, in there you're going contrary to everything they teach and all their classes, and there you'd face a little more. But just on a regular old base or a ship, if you just kind of check in with the chaplain and all, you don't really face much of this. At least I haven't. I don't suppose, you know, the general testimony. But the public relations is important. See, there's no point in having a base nearby or an apartment nearby or something nearby where there's a pool of manpower if you can't get through the gate or can't get through the door. So you must open the door. And that's through this. There are a couple things you can do to help in this opposition. One is train your men to be servants. Train your gals to be servants.
Is this one under D?
Yeah. Get separate for opposition. One under that would be train your men to be servants, and two, go see the people in charge. Go see the pastor or the chaplain. And if you have a convert here, and he's got some liberal pastor somewhere that doesn't believe in the things that we hold to be self-evident, go see that guy with that fellow. Talk it over with him. Or his parents. Now, do what you can to keep the opposition down.
You mean if you have a convert who is a member of this liberal church and has a liberal pastor, is that what you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Then go...
Go visit with him. Because you know what's going to happen? This convert's going to go and say, guess what, pastor? What? I've been converted. Converted, you know. And away we go, see? Comic explosion, mushroom clouds. And if you can kind of help him bridge that gap, because he's got to tell somebody, and these pastors are going to find it out because he's going to start associating with these people that the pastor thinks are way off base. Lauren?
And they'll support you, actually. Because what we did before we were going to have this week of meetings with Chuck Farrow on campus. So before we even said anything, we went to the religion department and told them everything we were planning. And they weren't for us, but because we went to them beforehand, when it became before the vote of the whole faculty and the board, they supported us just because they were friends. And then when they called this non-existent chapel committee into existence, and everyone in the whole thing was against us, but then after the president of the student body says, well, we say we give every view a fair shake, but we really don't. I'm going to vote for it just because we don't give a fair view. And the head of the religions department, he didn't want to be against us because we were friendly to him. Mm-hmm. He voted with us and we won 4-3.
Only missed it by 2. Good deal. Well, I mean, only... I'm up to stage 3. Time is gone, and I'll try to get through this before the next 2 classes are out. Let's stand up and have a word of prayer and head over for some fellowship and coffee, and then we'll go to our next session.